You're listening to an FX PhD podcast from fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD OD, the first FX PhD OD of 2014. Happy New Year, my friend.
Hey, how are you, John? 31 terms in, still counting, still rocking, still pushing.
It is in... if I say so myself, as we talked about last time, an impressive run, I think, to do this for as long as we have and keep changing and adapting and, frankly, still having fun doing it.
Yeah.
So I think that's the key in all this, learning a lot myself, enjoying teaching people. And actually, I was before we dive into the new term courses, just another great thing is actually seeing members' names in feature film credits. Saw quite a few films over the holidays, and it was very cool, as usual, to see names that we recognize from FX PhD as part of those films.
Well, I would add to that, nice seeing FX PhD professors as directors of major motion pictures is one I would also add to that list.
Yes, and yeah. Speaking of Gareth Edwards, of course, who was obviously much more than an FX PhD prof, of course, but yes, it's the circles in which we run.
And not just Gareth, Wes Ball as well is directing his feature. Of course, Gareth's, you're absolutely right, brilliant with Godzilla. And actually, I was emailing him yesterday. So yes, all going well, looking good. But yes, the profs' names in the credits as directors and the members' names as key people. And a day doesn't go by that I don't get an email or something from somebody saying that they're moving to like a DNEG or somewhere else and moving on and up the chain. It's terrific. I mean, it's everything we hoped it would be when we started all those years ago.
Yeah, so much, and a lot of great friends made. So I think I just want to reflect on that as we start the new year, as well as the new January term. And with the January term, where should we start? I'll let you start this time. I think I've started.
Okay, well, I'm going to start with what I'm doing right this second, which is I'm recording, well, not this second, but, you know, this today. I'm recording with Charles Poynton a new 300-level course on color science or advanced digital color science stuff. This is something that is a 300-level course, so it's one of a couple of 300-level courses we have this term. The idea being that Charles came out and a couple of years ago did a 300-level course. It was very successful back then. Certain things have moved on since then, so this is not the same course, just redone. This is a new course. But advanced digital color theory will have a little bit of overlap with some stuff he's covered in the past. Certain things have really moved forward. ProRes with Alexa, 4K is much more prominent, doing much more stuff with DCP in terms of delivery, and also picking up on the much more advanced nature of an ACES workflow these days. So we'll be doing some really hardcore stuff on that. And I just had a ball recording classes with him already. We've already got like one or two in the can that are being edited now, and it was great. Really good stuff geeking out with Charles.
Yeah, and we get a lot of questions about that overlap. And Charles was saying, you know, well, more than half of it is certainly going to be new as part of this course. I mean, by nature of it, it makes sense there's going to be some overlap in the previous offerings. But in his estimation, that's kind of what he was thinking, of course, during the term. So I think it's a sensible thing to, if you've taken it in the past, to want to take this course again. Because there's going to be quite a bit of new information, as you point out, Mike. So much has changed in the landscape since you last did these. Actually, the last time I was down in Sydney myself several years ago. So certainly worth your time to add this course, even if you've attended as ones in the past.
Yeah, I mean, a good example of that is a couple of terms ago, we did a class in background on LED lighting and the spectral response curves that we were seeing and how they caused what seemed to be theoretically the same, you know, color temperature lights to produce very different results on both Macbeth charts and even on just the face of someone like me. And if you saw that class, that was great. It's actually available free, and we've got a link to that in Charles's course, so you can, if you didn't see that one. But the point about that is that that was the kind of practice side of it. Well, these are the practical things that we know from LEDs. These are practical tips based on what we understand about the spectral frequencies and how the spikes are occurring in the LEDs and stuff. Now, with Charles, we get to discuss that in terms of, okay, well, why is that happening? And where are the levels, where are the points that we've got this in the pipeline? So in terms of light creation, in terms of sensors and their spectral response to those initial light creations, and then the matrixing of that information and how it's processed. And then, of course, at the end, how it's being dealt with when it goes out to, say, modern laser projectors or OLEDs, which have their own artifacts and own aspects. And so, you know, we've kind of got there, the practical we've done before. Now we're getting into the theory as to what the hell's going on behind the scenes. And Charles is actually just finishing up his own doctorate. And I think in class two, he's going to be publishing, and again, I think in a later class, some actual research from his thesis that he's done. So that'll be the first time that's published. And he'll be giving out his, you know, research from years now of looking into this stuff. And well, of course, gain from doing practical stuff all over the world. So we're really glad to have Charles back. And of course, you guys tend to respond very well to 300 level courses. So we're glad to have a few of those like this to offer.
Yeah, really outstanding. Well, let's dive into some of the more traditional course type things we've done at FX PhD in the past. And I'm really happy to have Russell Dodgson back this term teaching Nuke 308. After his previous course, those of you who've been members for a while, it was a project-based course called The Machine. Everyone has been, frankly, clamoring to have him back. And really, the only reason that we haven't had him back is his schedule. I mean, he's certainly been interested in doing more teaching for FXPG. He certainly enjoyed it. But he's a busy guy. He's in high demand at Framestore, and it's tough to fit this in. So very excited to have him back teaching an advanced new course. And while this one isn't a single project throughout the course, it is going to take a look at a couple of little different project-based things. The first part of the course is working in conjunction with the Houdini 209 course, working on cleaning up plates and reprojection and cleanup, adjusting the camera move on a shot that will then be later used in the Houdini course, just the kind of sensible stuff that you'd be doing on the job as well. But obviously, if you took his course before, you know the kind of level at which Russ is sharing his tips and techniques, especially considering some of the new features that are in Nuke 8 and dealing with projection and geometry and things like that. In addition to that, he's taken a big interest in looking at getting external data into Nuke. For instance, taking a look at point clouds and LiDAR scans. He actually took the time to use a Faro scanner himself over the Christmas holiday. What kind of person actually over the holiday goes out and does LiDAR scans?
A fun guy. A
fun guy, exactly. You know, Mike and I, we actually went down the factory there when we were at Seagraph a couple of years ago. And was that Singapore?
Yeah,
Singapore. So he's going to look at taking some scenes and showing how to utilize that and dive into some of that features. And that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg. He's got a lot of very cool stuff planned for the course. And again, many people have asked for him back, and we're happy to have him back this term. I'm sure you guys are going to love this course.
Yeah, absolutely. And 300 level Nuke is, this is really gold. This is stuff that is impossible to find anywhere else. Increasingly with the nature of stuff, you know, it's, you can get an introduction to this or an introduction to that at a very simplistic level online. But what PhD is trying to offer you is that insight that goes beyond that. And of course, the thing that makes it really different is that someone like Russell is in the forum to answer your questions. So not only are you getting a 300 level course, but if you've got a complex issue that you don't understand or a question about how to implement that and how it works in Nuke, you can just post in the forums and either another member or Russell himself will directly answer those questions. And I've got to say, that makes such a huge difference when you're trying to learn something. Just being able to ask a question and get like a proper response and not be looking at something going, well, my look's completely different on the screen and I've got no idea why and I'm kind of lost and I'm set adrift and, well, I guess I should just give up. It's just central to why we think PhD works.
Yeah, very, very much so.
But we also have 200.
Yeah, we do have a 200 level new course, which is, I guess, one could argue a follow-up to a previous zombie offering from Daniel Smith. But in this course, we're really kind of trying to kick it up a notch a bit with production, production footage and actually showing you how to get better footage on a budget. And this part won't be just simply entirely in Nuke, but actually some on-set techniques to actually demonstrate and show you how to get the job done effectively. We thought that would be kind of a nice angle to do as part of this course, you know, instead of just strictly a screen recording in Nuke, you know, show what it takes to efficiently plan and prep for the shoot and do things in as economical a way as possible. So that's how the first course, first part of the course is going to start out, and then dive into two separate projects as part of the course, doing two shots. It seems to be kind of a sensible amount. I think, Mike, a lot of the times this idea of kind of doing one shot in a per class or one shot in two classes actually is a bit much to take off. I don't think you chew or a bit much to cover in one class or two. What we try to do at FX PhD is dive much more into the details and what you can find in some of the free stuff out there and really get into the nitty-gritty. And that's why we're starting to kind of do more with less shots, I guess you could say, and really dive into the details. I mean, you're not going to get something in 30 minutes, frankly. You're not going to get the kind of detail we think that you want from FX PhD for that type of project.
Yeah, I mean, just think about it in practical terms, right? Like, you guys are mainly in the industry. So, you know, everyone sees the demo at a trade show where someone puts together a shot in like 10 minutes. And then you think to yourself, well, hang on a second, that shot was actually in production for like several weeks. There's got to be more to it than what they're doing there. I remember going to a trade show and having someone do one of those sort of spot demos, and they got to this bit, and then we removed this guy with the water and the dog on the surfboard and placed into the shot. And like afterwards, I went, hang on, I just completely missed how you did that, because that seemed to be really complicated. And that, oh yeah, that was incredibly complicated. That took weeks. And I went, but what? You just acted like you just, you know, yeah, no, that was all roto. We got it done elsewhere, and then we brought that stuff in, and then it didn't line up. We did all these other things, and I'm like, okay, well, the rest of the demo just made it seem like that wasn't even important, and yet that was the majority of the job. And, you know, you can skip over stuff and make stuff look glossy. I just don't think it's particularly educationally valid to do so. So, yeah, there's a real sense of trying to show you how to do things properly as opposed to a slick cooking show where miraculously stuff appears. And while I'm on that score, don't you just find it really annoying at the moment with cooking shows like Top Chef and stuff? They don't even show you any cooking anymore, right? It's just like, this is what I'm going to make, done. And I think that's increasingly the way this stuff's going with,
yes,
with software, right? It's like, I just want to do this. Well, you just do it in the software. What?
Load
how
preset,
do you do it in this software?
Put in the plugin.
Yeah. Like, how do you do it? I mean, hang on a second. And also, the other sort of parallel point is it's very easy to show a demo of something where it does, the footage is provided in exactly the way, and what you want to do is exactly what that node or that, you know, plugin or whatever was designed to do. In other words, you know, like if you do exactly what they expected you to do, providing the footage in exactly the way that it's wanted for a result that's standard, yeah, okay, that's good. But I think what you really need out of serious training is, okay, the director doesn't want that. They've got footage that isn't perfect, and they want to do something that's a bit different and original and new. And you have to bend the software a bit and kind of trick it around and sort of trip it up. And that is where the insight comes from, right? Because like, yeah, sure, if it's just, I mean, to use a simple example, if you want a god-awful standard dull lens flare right across the top of the screen, then using a standard god-awful plug-in lens flare is has it done in 2 seconds. That's absolutely true. But if you actually want something integrated with, you know, what everything that's going on, and it really has a feeling that it's got the same lens characteristics and the same bokeh, and it's like combined and it'll intercut with live action footage that was done for real. Okay, now we're in a zone where I have to actually know how to operate the software to get it done. So that's my pet hate of the year, actually. Sorry, bit of a rant there.
No, it's true. But and the other thing I think to keep in mind is also the perspective of where the course is coming from. We've tried to be kind of clear about that. And I think it becomes especially clear if you're looking at the professor teaching the course as well, as to where the target market is as well for the type of work they're doing. In the Nuke 300 level with Russ, he's doing, you know, really, really high-end major TV commercials at Framestore. I mean, that's where he's working. So, of course, the course will be targeted in that. The zombie course being taught by Daniel, much more of an independent filmmaking style. You've seen that also in the past from the stuff that we did last term, which was Nuke for After Effects Artists, kind of from that from that end. And the same holds true for the map painting course that we did last term. If we took that, Nick and Ludo, who taught that course, that was very much detailed in a feature film production pipeline from their background at DNEG. And similarly, this term, when Ludo is doing a follow-up with map painting techniques as well. It's a 200-level course, very much targeted to the type of workload and the type of work that he ends up doing at DNEG in London. And in this case, strictly focusing on the type of painting and the type of work that gets done in Photoshop, you know? That's what he's doing. That's where the real base of digital map painting comes from. And that's what he does, so that's what he's going to stick to. And I think that's really sensible. But just as an aside
on that, because I wanted to make this point, like we've got six Nuke courses that are being run with professors in the forums, answering questions, doing stuff. We just highlighted two new ones.
Right.
And I think we have eight in the vault, right?
Yeah.
So just picking up on your point about where stuff's coming from, it's really worth checking out the Our Courses page and, you know, the rundowns, because like with what is obviously 14 courses on offer in Nuke at various levels, you're probably going to find exactly what you're after.
Right.
And we're keen that you do find exactly what you're after, which is why we let you sample, if you remember, the first 2 weeks of any of the courses that are on offer, so you can work out you're in the right one kind of thing. But we absolutely, these are not just all in the same vein, all just looking at different parts of the Nuke software. These are all coming at it exactly the other way from different production points of view, different production attitudes, really.
And that's not to say that if you're doing feature film work that one course isn't going to be applicable to you, but I just think it's understanding, I think it's important to put that in context of where the professor's coming from in order to learn those tips and techniques. I can certainly learn something for commercials from someone doing feature film work, so I don't mean to apply that as well. I thought that's also what you're going to say about this. But it's true, right? I mean, I don't mean to say that if you're not doing feature film, none of these courses are for you. You can certainly pick those up, but I just think it's helpful to put that course in context to know where the professor's background is, I think, and understanding what's going to be done.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Fry, who is returning with the production Nuke finishing course, you know, came off doing ton of stereoscopic high-end feature film work like The Great Gatsby. So yeah, obviously that's going to influence his perspective on Nuke, but I absolutely know that there are people that were doing that from a commercials world that loved what Alex had to offer.
And I think that's going to certainly hold true for the digital map painting techniques. While you may get, in Russ's course, he's going to work in a lot of building rough geometry and projections and things like that to actually recreate the environment. And while another core step of that will be actually developing your painting skills, and your painting chops in Photoshop to actually help you deal and create good map painting as well. And that's where Ludo's new course is going to come in. I mean, he and Nick really enjoyed teaching the course last term, but tried to do too much in the duration of the term. And that's where he felt like, look, if we're going to build this map painting curriculum, digital map painting curriculum, let's start in really developing the tools or skills, that you need to get the job done. So what he's going to do is actually focus on a lot of mini projects as part of the course and actually show you how to paint, do color correction, working with light, working with the sky environment and things like that. So I guess I'll be honest, you could say that maybe... this course is maybe a bit out of order from the offering that we did last term. I mean, we took advantage of having Nick and Ludo available last term to do it. But again, I think this is certainly a great follow-up to that course, and especially based upon the feedback and the forums from last term. I think you guys are really going to be psyched about this course.
Yeah, another really good opportunity timing-wise that we're grasping with both hands is the fact that... Mari 2.5 now supports OS X from Mountain Lion on. And this is a big thing for me because a lot of people that are texture artists and stuff do like the Mac platform. I certainly like the Mac platform. And I'm a big fan of Mari. I think it's a really good piece of software. And I think it's really well made. It's not just that it's got good tools, but it's got a really healthy modern architecture underneath it that provides significant kind of response. So we've actually got two Mari courses, haven't we, John? And new Mari courses available this time.
Yeah, we do. And we're especially excited. And you're right about the tech. I mean, it's interesting that they used Mari to demonstrate the new Mac Pro with its two GPUs on it. The essence of Mari is actually that designed for really poor computers. You know, I mean, it's really smartly designed. So if you had a lower end graphics card, you can actually get a whole lot out of Mari using, you know, an older system or an older graphics card. So if you're interested in that, don't think that you necessarily have to have the latest Quadro 6000 or you know, the latest equivalent on the ATI side. You're going to be able to do this on your MacBook and even older MacBook Pros. As well, so don't sweat that detail regarding that. As you said, the technology is fantastic at what they've done. But yes, we have two courses. The first of which is being taught by Brittany Du, a first time prof, but have been working with her actually for about 3 months on this course. She's had a lot of experience actually at Rhythm and Hues as a texture painter. And so the idea is to actually have, you know, a good solid foundation of knowledge. You've noticed that we have a lot of 100 level introductory courses that provide that foundation for the other courses at FXPHD Nuke and things like that. But she's basically going to work through a couple assets actually throughout the term and actually show you how to use Mari by actually painting the asset. So I think it's going to be really great. She's actually done training before in the past. Before her job at Rhythm and Hues, she actually as well worked with the foundry, which is actually really cool. And so she's got experience teaching.
Also solidly covering PText, which I think is really key, because I think PText in Mari is one of the really big strengths. It doesn't have to be a PText pipeline that you're using it on, but I'm really glad that she's going to solidly cover that PText aspect of it. Because, you know, it's ever since Disney published that, for some, not all, obviously there's a ton of good pipes that don't use PText, but I'm a really big fan of PText pipes.
Yeah, and that's a big aspect of what they've added and support within the application as well. So anyway, that's that will be the start of it. And then that building upon that is Mikey Rogers, who's doing the 200 level Mari course. And really excited actually about having Mikey here. Has actually given us a heads up by a couple people in our search for looking for a prof to help us teach at FXPHD. We obviously talked to a lot of people and his name kept coming up, which was really interesting. So a big thanks to actually Ryan Summers, who's teaching Tautomo Graph course for us in the October term, for actually helping lead us to him. But he's actually really going to dive in as well. He's actually tracked down a very cool model, and you'll see that actually in the O-Week video. But a really cool asset that we're actually free to give to everybody, which is a big deal. You guys don't have to go out and buy a different model. We actually have the rights to actually work on that model throughout the term and distribute it. So you guys can work on that, follow along with the course, and really dive into detail. Now, you may be asking, can I take both of these at the same time? And I think the answer is yes. If you want, you could kind of start out and just concentrating on the 100 level course, but I would suggest, you know, the two of them side by side. While the 200 level course certainly will build upon the 100 course, we've really worked hard to make sure there's not a ton of overlaps. You'll get certainly two very distinct courses, two very distinct sets of information as part of that. In addition to that, something very cool is that we actually have a light brush available on the VPN this term. If you go to the knowledge base and check out the VPN page, we're actually going to really stoked to have that available on the VPN as part of an additional tool set as this Mari course, and just for stuff in general at FXPHD. I'm really happy the folks at Tandon have made that available to us. It's really cool software. There's actually an article, what, maybe from a year ago, I think, Mike, that you did?
Yeah, I was at SIDGRAPH when I first saw it.
Yeah.
And it's clever tech, but also it was one of those things where you go, oh my God, that's exactly what you want. And then in the early days when they were first talking about it, I was like all over them. In fact, I think I had to like come back to the booth like three or four times, and it was almost like, okay, this guy seems to be obsessing about this thing. And I was like, I think this is really significant. And yeah, I couldn't, honestly, I'm really stoked this is available. I'm actually a bit surprised, quite frankly, that we managed to pull this off, because I didn't a year ago think that was going to be possible. I just didn't think that this would be something that we'd be able to pull off. So I'm really pleasantly surprised. Well, full credit to you, John, because I didn't.
It's also, I mean, we're a bit, their product is a bit different in general than the rest of the products they
Yeah.
So, right. It's part of the company. And that was actually, I think, and I remember going with you to the booth actually, and working through this process, trying to introduce them to us and things like that. But of course, thankfully, as this has gone out, and Mikey being a big supporter, Mikey's also helped us hook us up with that. So thanks to him as well. But we are very happy that they've agreed to provide that to us on the VPN, because as you will see. In one of the classes, I think it's probably later in the term. I don't know which one it is, but I think after the mid break, we really start diving into it. When he starts using Lightbrush, you'll see how cool it is. And in the meantime, you know, check out, it's been a bit, but check out that article on FX Guide as well. I think if you just type FX Guide Lightbrush in Google, you'll find it quite easily.
Yeah, it's cool tech. It's not, obviously, the whole course isn't on that, so let's not give the impression that it is. It's just one of the aspects. And this is actually not uncommon in a number of the courses. I mean, for example, we've got an Arnold course, which is applicable just in its own right. It tends to be Arnold for Mayer, but that's going to have, you know, taking Arnold stuff into Nuke. And so, again, we don't have any particular barrow to push, but what tends to happen is that we'll be, from our FX Guide exposure, talking to tons of facilities around the world. And you just, either on and off the record, just learn from people what they're using and what their pipelines tend to be. And then you say, okay, well, obviously a lot of this Arnold stuff is going into Nuke, so we should make sure that when we're doing our Arnold stuff, we, you know, follow that through into Nuke. Not that it's a Nuke course, not that you couldn't use it for After Effects or anything else, but you know, we're not just sort of pushing one barrow, and we're happy to flag other bits of software when they're relevant to what's going on. And I think Matt Leonard's going to do a really, really good job with this Solid Angle Arnold course. And I'm pretty proud of the fact that we were, I think, one of the first companies in the world to provide Arnold training. We're the first company to provide Arnold training. And we've been working really closely with Solid Angle. We've got a lot of respect for those guys. Their software has produced some spectacular stuff this year. I think for me, shots of Elysium and stuff that they did in, stuff that the software was used for by a bunch of companies, just spectacular looking imagery. So rendering something pretty close to our hearts, and we're really glad that Matt is able to bring us this 200 level Arnold course. And I know a few of you are really keen to have that Arnold course focused with Maya, so that's what we're doing.
Yeah, very much so, and also. Being able to provide you with access, and you members access to that software as well as part of the membership. That's one benefit as well that you get from FX PhD.
Do you want to just give a general rundown on the VPN as well as the sort of you know, special arrangements we have?
Yeah, really, really quickly. The idea, and I think many of you know, many of you for the first time listening to DDD who just found us this term. The idea with a VPN is that you create a secure connection between your computer and our server so that only traffic goes between your machine and our machine, very private, and you request a license. It's similar to if you were working in a facility and had a network license server where you launch the application, it goes out, pings the server, says, okay, I can run it, you're good to go, and that's what happens with the VPN. We have a wide variety of software that's available to that. If you go to the knowledge base, which is under the resource tab, and under topics, click VPN, you can see quite a variety of software that we have. Everything from RV to Hero, Arnold, Houdini, Softimage, Katana, Modo, Mudbox, Cinema 4D, RenderMan Pro Server, Mari, Ocula, and more. It's really a wide variety of software, which you can use to learn the software, create clips for real. The only limitation is you cannot use the software to make money directly. You cannot use it on paying jobs. That would be a violation of the agreement. But it works really well. And I think, Mike, you did a total several terms ago, and I think it's even increased since then.
It's something like $47,000.
$47,000, yes. So, and we've added stuff since then. So,
and not only that, but it's the latest versions. In almost every case, it's the latest version of the software. So what you're looking at here is, you know, stuff that's really current. And that makes a big difference as well, because, you know, sometimes people do a trial, and then when they're going to come back to later, they've used up their trial. And of course, that was an earlier version of the software. And maybe it didn't do what you needed back then, but you want it to do what it does now. There's one other really good point about the VPNs, which is we understand that it's kind of hard necessarily to start and finish the entire term exactly on the 10-week mark. as or other 12 weeks if you allow for the breaks. So the VPN software of your current term is still valid a little bit after the end of term. So it's not valid for forever. You don't get VPN for forever. But it is the case that if you decided to be with us just for this term and you weren't finished by the start of the April term, you'd still have a bit of time just to finish up your courses. And there's like a little bit of grace we give at the end of each term for your VPN. So don't panic if you are thinking of joining and thinking, well, man, I'm not going to get it all done exactly in time and I'm going to be thrown off at the last second. We understand that. We kind of work with you on that.
No, and that specific date for the January term is you have through May 15th.
See, I couldn't remember that.
Well, that, I just thought you were nicely setting me up for that.
Okay. I was trying to think. I was like, I
heard your wheels like, turning. I know you well enough.
Yeah, I'm thinking, every term it's different.
Yeah, and that's related to STAR agreements with software manufacturers. And they want to make sure that, you know, you're taking the courses, you're doing it, and it's sensible. But I think that's almost, a half term later, right? I mean, that's 45 days. So that's a really... it seems like a sensible amount.
Of course, you're not going to need that because you're going to love stuff so much. You're going to want to hang around.
You're
going to
keep
term.
Yes, exactly.
But I'm just saying that just to be nice, we don't cut it off right on the end of term. So that's the kind of guys we are. Actually, what you can do, I mean, seriously, what you can actually do inside PhD is mind-numbing. Like if you apply yourself to the courses and actually do them, talk to and get from some of the world's best artists personal sort of help with what you're doing and put together stuff using the best software. I mean, this is not like the, you know, we're holding back some of the good stuff, right? Like things like Arnold, like Katana, like the Mari, like all the things that we've been talking about. These are the best pieces of software, best of class in the world. And, we obviously think there are some other bits of software that are great and we don't have them on VPN. I mean, clearly we don't have Photoshop on VPN and Photoshop's a terrific piece of software. But you have the access to such an amazing talent group and amazing set of tools. It's just down to you. I mean, I know it's hard and I know it's kind of sucky, but it's really down to you. If you can apply yourself for a term, you can totally up your career and forge ahead. And as I said at the outset, a bunch of people have done. I don't want to sound too salesy, but I mean, it's just friggin' awesome what you can put together. There's a huge amount of stuff here.
Yeah. And, on the VPN, we have it's not new now, I guess, but fairly new, Houdini 13. Yep. Of course, we have that available and a new course teaching that. And it's being taught by a former FX PhD member who was in a member first at FX PhD of the October 07 term. I just looked that up. And now I was going to say 5 years later. I'm sorry, but it's almost 7 years later.
And his film credits now are things like Rush, Fast and Furious, Godzilla. I mean, he's been working at DNEG, Framestore. So when we say he's formerly a student, I think alumni success story would be a good way of describing him.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You too can be like this.
So I'm actually really enjoying that aspect of FX PhD as we talked in the beginning, but he's really excited about it. And frankly, I think from your standpoint, if you're taking this course, I think it's really cool because, he knows the vibe of FX PhD. He was really excited about kind of returning the favors, so to speak, because he saw the environment in the forums and the classes and things like that and kind of wanted to share that back. So it actually kind of inspired him to want to do this course at FX PhD. And so I thank Russ, who works with Jens now at Framestore in London for hooking us up with him in a very cool Houdini 13 course. It's going to be a very much a single shot-based course. There's actually quite a bit to tackle as part of the term. This is the one that is actually pushing a lot of the stuff. But in the early part of the course, he will be actually laying the building blocks of some of the knowledge that will then be applied to the new project starting in class number 5. So once Russ is done getting all the elements ready together in the Nuke 301 course, or 302 course, I'm not sure which it is. Whatever,
and
it's 300 level course.
Debris and smoke and fire and bullet rigid body sims going off right, left, and center, crashing planes.
And I will actually, I'm going to actually take a minute actually to thank Eduardo again. I think I mentioned him last term, and that was part of the impetus in doing the matte painting course from last term that I went down to Mexico City to shoot. This is actually working with him and building on this project that we're working internally over the long term at FX PhD. This is actually going to be somewhat of an aspect in that course as well, this idea of this plane crash that happened in this abandoned city. But again, and just, you know, again, what we're doing at FX PhD, building entire curriculum and having these courses kind of feed off one another and feed into other courses. We really do plan for the long term at FX PhD, and this course kind of builds into that. So I guess a very early leak that expect in the future to see something somewhat similar as part of another project with either Nuke and or Houdini.
Now, smashing planes and burning things and painting up pilots that have been charred from said explosions and massively cool LiDAR shit is all great, right? Don't get me wrong. It is awesome. But I'm here to say that on behalf of my own career and that of my good esteemed colleague, Mr. John Montgomery, if you really want to get ahead, it's going to be likely that you're going to need to do a fair amount of stuff at the slightly other end of the creative spectrum, which is pack shots. And we have that covered because this is not being in any way facetious. This
no.
is really hardcore. The is it bread and butter? I don't know whether it's bread and butter. That makes it sound a little too simple. It's like it's where there is a huge
bread and butter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A huge pipeline of actual work done because it pays the bills. Do you want to discuss our CMP?
Well, I laugh about it. In the old week, I made a little bit of a light of it. But it's true. I mean, I'm sorry. I did a ton of pack shots. And I wish I had a course starting out.
Yeah. Like I paid this. My mortgage off with pack shots.
I did. Me too, as well. I mean, one could argue that we started FX PhD because of pack. I mean, it's a bit overstated. But it is the kind of nuts and bolts stuff that you're going to be doing. It is commerce, after all. And if you're working commercials, but frankly, other stuff as well. I mean, you're seeing it in feature films. You're seeing it in other things where an integrated product shot of some kind is going to be important. And that's where this course picks up. It's looking at a variety of different pack shots from just a simple box. There are a variety of ways in which you can do a pack shot, whether it's tracking and reapplying the front of it with a planar tracker like Mocha, or doing a full 3D solve as well, or doing a full 3D box product as well, which is going to kind of be the approach for this.
I mean, I did an entire run, I remember this, where I was doing car replacements. Like they'd have a car ad, and there'd be a slightly different model in Australia or mm-hmm. a different model update. And basically, it was the same bloody car. But they changed the grille. They changed the headlights a bit. They changed some bloody thing. And I used to just have to retrack on and replace parts of cars and, you know, fix them up and remove reflections and stuff. And I used to do that. And it was never the stuff that I was presenting a paper on or, you know, doing an article on. No one ever wanted to do a story on it. And, you know, we just charged out every week. It made us money. It put, you know, I mean, it wasn't like it was bad work. Don't get me wrong. Like, I really enjoy doing it.
It can be
sometimes
fun,
really
actually.
Challenging.
Yeah. I mean,
trying
really
to get
can.
Stuff behind sprays of water coming up from the wheels and stuff. But I've got to tell you, like, there was just a ton. I mean, like hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of business that we put through on that. And that was just one client. And another one with let's just say it was a large multinational corporation that made fried chicken products. And you know, we just do a lot of that stuff, and it would be easy in the sense that no one would get their knickers in a knot too much. You know what I mean? Like it would be mm-hmm. friendly and relaxed, and people would, you know, there was a budget, and we just did the work, and it never had anywhere near the amount of credit given to it for literally funding a whole bunch of other stuff that we did that was more cutting edge and, you know, wild and crazy. But I mean. It'd be easy for us not to run this course because obviously you might say that it's a hard course to sell, but it's the sort of course that if I was, as you say, John, if I was starting out, I would have totally killed to have this course.
Yeah, I think it's going to be, it'll be fun. And especially appreciate some of the techniques that he talks about in actually building things smartly. So one of the other aspects of that is the versioning aspect that you just talked about. And that's also going to be covered as part of the course as well. So very much a real world...
Yeah, and John and I, like, we came up with these things because of our experience, right? It's not like somebody came to us and said, hey, you know, we want to pay you to do a product shot course or something. Like, it doesn't work like that. We were sitting around discussing courses, and I think you came up with it, John. You said, well, if you really want to be serious about this, we should do a product course, because that's where, you know, the kind of nuts and bolts of it are. And I totally agree with you. The second you said it, I was like, yep, that's what we should do. So we include these courses because we honestly believe in them. And we think that for some of you, they'll be exactly what you want. It's a really crucial discipline to understand.
Yeah, very much so. And another course that certainly comes from both of our backgrounds and such is a new smoke editing effects course taught by Brian Mulligan, who I just have the utmost respect for. I really appreciate and respect his teaching skills. I like the creativity he does on tight broadcast deadlines, as well as just his willingness to share knowledge, you know, with others. He's that nice combination. I mean, there are obviously a lot of fantastic artists and editors out there who not so great on the teaching skills, but I think his enthusiasm and organization really shine through as part of this course, and I'm looking forward to this. And while certainly titled as an editing and effects without a desk smoke, that's the title of it, I really do, and I made a mention of this with Brian's blessing as part of the description, if you're working in Flame, and you're working in the Flame 2014 edition, there's going to be a little bit of difference because it's based on smoke and smoke on Mac. But I really think that if you're in Flame, you will also get a lot out of this course because, like it or not, there's more and more integration with the timeline. And this linking of the story-centric and story-driven timeline with the shot-based batch editor, as well as some new changes that have been done to hopefully make things easier with the media library as well. So Once again, if you're running smoke, great. This is certainly for you. I really highly recommend taking this. But also if you're a Flame artist as well, I likewise strongly recommend taking this. There will be stuff that's different, not exactly the same. But I think if you have the opportunity to learn from someone like Brian and really learn to how to get the most out of the timeline, it's going to serve you well, because we see in the type of stuff that they're changing the software from the new processing pipeline as part of the timeline that's much faster in the past, utilizing the GPU is incredibly optimized. I mean, the timeline is using batch to render now, so it really serves you well to actually take this course, I think.
I was watching one of his earlier courses, just kind of reviewing it. I don't know why it was. There was some reason I needed to check it out for a tech check or something. And I remember watching, I was like half watching it, you know, how you're just sort of keeping an eye on it. And then I was like, wait, what did he do there? Well, back that up. And then I was like, huh? That's a really cool trick. And then I was like hooked. And I was like, wait a second. Wait, back that up. What was that? And it was doing some really cool stuff. It was just for a promo. And it was, you know, obviously not Flame. And I was like, ooh, why didn't I think of that? It's just like such an obvious thing. By the way, Brian, as many of our professors are, is on Twitter. He's a BKM editor. If you want to follow him on Twitter, he's a great guy. Yeah, and really good. I think he's currently trapped in the snow apocalypse, which is, of course, North America. Yes. But yes,
he is right in the center of it in Indianapolis. And also congratulations to him. He was actually designated an Autodesk Expert Elite as part of his sharing of knowledge on Autodesk Area. I always like to give props to people who share their knowledge publicly and help others out. So kudos to him for that.
Yes, and if he's digitizing tablet ever thaws out, yes, I'm sure I'll get back on Twitter. Yes, no, he's very good. Yes.
It is cold in the Midwest. Minus 15.
Yeah,
minus
what's that
26
about? I'm out
Celsius.
Sailing. I'm in. I'm having.
Let's just say I'm happy to be in LA this week.
Yeah,
and I've moved out here from Chicago. Week. So, well, my friend, I believe we have one more course,
and I believe it is our Tech Guerrilla Previs course by one of our most enthusiastic profs. John Griss is. John is a great guy. He's really, you got to do his courses to get, like, he just prepares, puts a lot into the courses. So I am no way being sarcastic when I say he's enthusiastic. He just has a love for the industry. And this is going to be really seen this term, because not only, I think it's picking up on a point I made earlier about using other bits and pieces. This is kind of meant to be a guerrilla previous in the sense that, you know, he's going to grab and does anything that is going to make the job work. So new bits of tech, new bits of stuff, new tricks, home mocap type stuff, you know, grabbing in environments. I think I saw your head and mine suspiciously in the promo video. I'd have to speak to him about that, John. But yes, so the thing about this is that we're really keen to use and to explore game engines, but we don't want to just go off and do a course that's completely irrelevant to all of you. Well, not all of you, but you know, just focused on producing games. So by using the UDK, the Unreal Engine stuff for doing previs is a great compromise, right? Because you get this understanding of how the previs engine works, but you can be knocking stuff out and producing stuff at an astonishing rate. And you would be naive to think that this isn't going to play an enormous role in stuff moving forward. So this is, of course, a 200-level course that builds on his previous 100-level course. If you've done the 100-level course, that would be great. John, I'm pretty sure you can also do the 100-level... Can you do it? Is it in the...
You know, can we probably need
can
to add
we
it.
We add
probably
that,
need
John?
To add that, yes.
We can
we'll
add
chat
that,
about that know. And see if we can make it happen.
Yeah, but... yeah, so he's just a bundle of good ideas. I really appreciate somebody that works hard but is also just so into it that they keep coming up with new and cool things. It's not to be restrained by the technology, just to harness it and grab it, which is why it's got that kind of gorilla word in the title. This is definitely get in and roll your sleeves up stuff.
Very, very fun. Hey, and one other thing too is that, so that's the listing of our new courses. As we mentioned, there are a lot more than the new courses on offer. We just dive into those because so many of you, frankly, just joined from term to term to term. But we have a whole selection of courses. The difference between them, the standard courses, for those of you who are new, those courses come out weekly during the term and include discussion forums to ask questions to the prof. The Vault courses, they're effectively what it says right there on the page. They're our greatest hits, effectively, from our past offerings. All 10 classes of the course are available for immediate download. And unlike it says right now, and I'll correct it, we did actually add discussion forums for the courses last term. The difference is they don't include, the prof is not necessarily around to discuss those things. We've had many request over the various terms to actually have forums for the Vault courses. There's basically one forum per course. We can discuss questions with those who are taking it. They'll contain discussion of previous terms and things like that over time. But those basically come out all 10 classes at once, available for immediate downloads. So you can watch them right away. That's the difference between those two. And related to that, those of you who are not members of FX PhD in our October term, we deep sixed the torrent functionality. So there's no more torrent functionality at FX PhD. Basically what you do is you can just download the courses automatically right from your schedule page. The downloads also work if you're using iTunes. They'll download automatically for you as well. You just won't have to utilize the torrent functionality as we have in the past. We allow you to select a server in the United States West Coast or in the UK as your preferred server, and you'll download from there. So those of you who are in Europe get really nice download speeds directly from the server in the UK. Those of you in the United States and Asia, because it's on the West Coast, get really decent download speeds as well. I think you could probably verify that, Mike.
Yes, absolutely. And look, the torrents served a tremendous purpose, but they are, for some people, a little bit of a like thing. You could always get around them by just waiting a week, because the things would move from being torrent to direct download after a week. So it's not as if it was impossible. But yeah, not having the torrents is just one less step that you have to worry about.
And I would say probably 99% of you have gotten faster download speed, as fast or faster download speeds from the direct downloads. We've worked with a couple people who ran in some hitches and worked through it. But again, for most everyone, it's a win-win because you get the materials faster with less hassle.
Hey, now we're at the end. Can I rat hole for a second?
Rat hole away.
Did you see any films over the Christmas break?
I did, as a matter of fact.
Did you happen to see Walter Mitty?
I did not. That was actually not available in the small Colorado town in which I was located.
It's really good.
Is it?
Yeah, it's a good... I really liked it. It's a really sweet little film. And it actually has some impressive visual effects sequences, though, interestingly, by the very nature of them, they're not directly in the line of the plot. In other words, they're his daydreams. But yeah, I think the guys that did the visual effects for it did a really good job, but it's a great little film. I mean, the other one, of course, is The Hobbit. Did you see that?
I did not either, because I wanted to see it on a big screen. The dangers of being, the thing about being in a small town is the screening facilities are not necessarily the best, and being the type of person I am, I'd really like to see it on a good projector, on a nice screen.
Well, we have these covered over at FX Guide, though. In your case, John, you shouldn't look at them until you... Okay, yes, and I have a friend who, a friend who went to get a big screen at Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, in the sales, they have sales here. We call it Boxing Day, it's the day after Christmas sales. I think it's the same as your, you have a Black Friday thing.
Yeah, the week before, is after, yeah.
Okay, so anyway, so he goes to buy this big screen TV, much bigger than his current one. And it's like $3,000 or something, right? And it gets home, but the speakers aren't any good because the TV is like wafer thin these days, and the bevel around it is about as thin as your little finger. So there's nowhere to put the speakers, but sort of behind it and shooting down and kind of bouncing off the floor.
Awesome.
And so he tries doing this, doesn't work, right? Just the sound isn't very good. Picture's great, big screen. Picture's not a problem. Sound is. So they're like, well, just plug it into your stereo and use surround sound. It's like, well, who the hell wants to every time you watch, you know, like a show, just have to hook up your stereo and you've got two remotes and it's a hassle and you're watching the news or something else. You just don't want to do that, right? Yes, you get a screener, you'll do it. But otherwise, you know, 90% of the time, you just don't do that, do you? And so they were like, okay. So then they sold him an underneath external speaker, you know, like a, a speaker that plugs into your TV that goes under. So now he's got this $3,000 TV and this extra whole second set of speakers in the room to try and simulate what was happening before on his smaller cheap. Okay, that didn't work. So then he ended up trading all of that in and going to an even more expensive TV. Ended up with a 4K television just to get good speakers on it. And I'm just like sitting there listening to this the other day, gobsmacked. And I was like, you know, just be like, you could go to the cinema so many times for that amount of money. It's not funny. He's like, yeah, I know.
I am a big fan of the stereo surround system with the TV and the Universal Harmony remote that makes it so easy to turn on the TV. But to work around, frankly, because it is, I'm paying for the image on the screen. You're paying for the image on the screen, not the speakers. That is certainly the case in any friggin' panel nowadays. I'm actually surprised anyone listens to sound from. I mean, I know there are people who do, but
I do.
It's, do
but
you
not
really?
For
you don't
movies.
Have a, you don't have a. You don't
well,
have
not
a
for
stereo
movies,
setup
but for most. Well, yeah, but for the rest of. I mean, you know, like you're sitting on the couch and you.
Yeah, no, I have totally had the stereo hooked up. You just hit one
well,
button.
Well, that's because you have one
TV.
Of the. Yeah.
I'll
no.
hook you up.
Anyway.
Man.
Well, next time you come down to Sydney, you have to do that. But
I'll bring
for
that.
Now,
I know,
yeah,
I know. I'm writing that down. Mike Seymour. Universal
needs new
programmable
remote. Remote, yeah. Anyway, so we have these covered over at FX Guide. So there's a Smog thing on, and also something on Walter Mitty, which I totally recommend as a film. It's not the biggest visual effects film, but it's a great film. There's also a good thing on a CineSite short film that was really like a pseudo ad that CineSite did. I like those guys at CineSite. They do good work. Yeah, so there's a bunch of stuff over at FX Guide. You should check that out. There you go.
Please do. Well, thanks, everyone, for listening to this podcast. We hope to see you in the forums. We hope you'll join FXPHD. We're really excited about this term. You can see we've, again, really very much concentrated on effects and visual effects as part of this term to start out 2014, and we hope you guys enjoy it. So far, I think the feedback's been great on it, and we appreciate hearing from you guys.
Yeah, yeah, please, fire away in the forums. And, of course, you can follow us also on Twitter. Our Twitter feed is FX Guide News, at FX Guide News. And John's one is...
John Mont FX. John Mont FX.
And my one is Mike Seymour. It's kind of original, isn't it, really? Just go with the straight thing. Anyway, yeah, but the main place to hang out with us is in the forums. And we hope to see you there.
Yeah, thanks so much, guys, and we'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.